eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Have an excellent conversation coming up with a former colleague of mine who is doing fantastic work at ESPN. Emily Kaplan is a national reporter and writer for ESPN's coverage in the NHL. Also the co-host of In the Crease, ESPN's NHL podcast with Linda Cohn. She's a regular on Around the Horn. Emily will be assigned to the Stanley Cup Final, the Lightning versus the Avalanche, which really looks like it's going to be an awesome series. Got a little shades of Islanders Oilers from back in the '80s, changing in the guard. So game one of the Stanley Cup Final Wednesday on ABC and ESPN Plus. Emily and I get into a number of topics, including the Avalanche and Lightning series. But beyond that, it's really sort of about how she has processed and handled and what her first year in her position has been like. She's been bombarded on social media with feedback, including for some of the questions she's asked, for wearing a mask, which is absurd given that the NHL mandates it, what it's like to be on television versus to be strictly doing writing, which is what she did before and certainly what she was doing when I was at Sports Illustrated and MMQB with her. And so it's, I think it's a real honest and interesting conversation of somebody in their first year of a very high profile media position within the NHL. I think you will enjoy it. So Emily Kaplan coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. As I mentioned at the top, Emily Kaplan's a national reporter and writer for ESPN's coverage of the NHL. She's co-host of In the Crease, ESPN's NHL podcast with Linda Cohn. She's a regular on Around the Horn, a former colleague of mine at Sports Illustrated, and it's incredible, and the MMQB, I should say, and it's incredible just to see her success at ESPN. We'll get into that a little bit. The Tampa Bay Lightning will be in Colorado to face Colorado Avalanche for game one of the Stanley Cup Final. That's on ABC and ESPN Plus, and Emily Kaplan will be there. Emily, welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know, and you're doing me a solid here because I know you're. This is a busy day for you. We're taping on Monday. You're about to travel. So thank you. Thank you for doing this. Well, let me ask you one quick question here about the series. It is really like if you were going to sort of dream up like a Stanley Cup final with the two-time defending champions, you know, Stamkos and everybody, yeah, Vasilevskiy, and everybody's on that team versus sort of the up-and-coming team in the league, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. Like, this is the series you would want. It does feel to me, and I know this is before your time. It's sort of when I was really young. But it feels like the a bit of like the Sana Islanders, Edmonton Oilers kind of feel to it. You know what I mean? Like this dynasty that exists, and then you have this young team, which you know is going to be great, and it's just a question of like when their time is. But I would think just as someone who covers the sport,
like independent of everything else, you got to be so psyched, right, for this series. It looks like it's going to be so great.
Yeah, all you want is a good series, right, and drama and stakes. And I think this series brings that even before we begin. Like, we're starting to get our staff predictions in, and I'm on this big email chain, and honestly, everyone needs to learn how to not reply all. But it does seem like everyone at ESPN is really split, and everyone is predicting a long series. I'd like to pat myself on the back, and this is actually what I predicted in the preseason. I had Avs beating the Lightning. I shouldn't pat myself on the back too hard because I do think they were the betting favorites to make it to the final, but this is just kind of the hunch I had about Tampa, is that they know, even if they weren't the top regular season team, they know how to amp it up when it matters, and they know how small this window is to chase this history. At the same time, the trend we've seen in the NHL the last couple of years is teams have sustained regular season success. Tampa was one of those teams. Washington was one of those teams. St. Louis, they can't get over that hump in the playoffs. They have this heartbreak, and finally they break through, and it just feels like that's the timeline that Colorado's on right now. So you're so right. It does feel like Edmonton and the Islanders were like, there's kind of this passing of the torch. But I have no idea if that torch is passed this year or if it's next year.
How have you found, and again, understanding that as a member of ESPN, as a rights holder, you're going to get very good access, but how have you found these two particular teams to deal with in your position?
Excellent. I think anyone who follows the sport knows that John Cooper is special, the coach of the Lightning. He understands it on a big picture level of how to use the media, how to present himself to the media, not only to promote his team, but really to promote the sport. You know, I do these in-game interviews, and I'm sure you'll want to touch on that. And he's the best at it, where he understands, no, it's not ideal to go talk to a reporter in the middle of the game. At the same time, we have an opportunity to explain something to the viewers and show them something to look for. And he's been so gracious with that. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with Jared Bednar, because in my experiences with him during the regular season, he's been just as insightful. This is a guy, you know, who I think a lot of people, after that year where they only had 48 points, like, he might not have survived, but there was a reason that they kept him as a coach. They gave an extension earlier this year, even though they hadn't seen that postseason success that they wanted, because I do think he's special as well. So excited to talk to both of these coaches. Both PR staffs have been super helpful. It should be a good series.
Having talked to a lot of people in your position in other sports over the years, a lot of the relationships that exist between the on-air talent and the coach gets it builds in production meetings. It builds off camera. I remember Doris Burke actually getting to the point. She told me that, like, she could tell Greg Popovich when he was kind of being an asshole, just to be very blunt. And, like, they had that kind of relationship where they were sort of could be honest with each other back and forth. What have your conversations been with league coaches about your role? Because in many ways, it's an invasive role, because, like, it's a new role. Like, 50 years from now ago, you didn't have a reporter between the benches to talk to coaches, etc. But this is also how you grow the league, and this is how you grow your sport. So have you had to, let me make it open-ended. What have those conversations been like for you with the coaches in terms of them understanding what your position is writ large?
To be honest, I don't think I've had to do much explaining, because I think they get it. Again, even if it's uncomfortable for them to do these interviews and give me that access in the middle of the game, they're required to do so by the league, and they understand why they're required to do it. So I never have had to, like, do the explaining of, here's why I'm here, here's what I'm trying to do, because I think inherently that contract just exists. You know, some are better at it than others. Like, I wrote Bruce Cassidy a really long email after I covered the Bruins series, just thanking him for always treating me with so much respect. And I could just tell in those meetings that he treated me exactly like he treated my male colleagues. And even though I'm relatively new to this, and I'm walking in there with Ray Ferraro, who obviously has the resume as a player and a broadcaster, Sean McDonough, who's, you know, broadcasted this, that, and everything, you know, I was treated equally, and I really appreciated that. Rod Brindamore, I've been meaning to reach out to him, because he had some of my favorite in-game interviews. And one of the reasons we fought hard to do it at the bench with him is because he's such an emotional guy. And I felt like in the moment, just reading his emotions was good TV and good for the viewers, just to see and take you inside there. You know, we had one maybe awkward encounter for the viewer is when I asked him about pulling Auntie Ranta, and Auntie Ranta was right in front of him. Some viewers took umbrage to that. I didn't. A couple different reasons. One, it's so loud in the arena. Rod could barely hear me. I actually don't even think Auntie could hear me as well. But B, this is my job. I'm there to, you know, answer questions and explain things to the viewer. That was the number one thing, right? He had just pulled the goalie. It was like 2 minutes earlier. Just take us through the thought process of where you're at in the game. If I didn't ask that question, I wouldn't have been doing my job. And if either Auntie or Rod had an issue with it, either of them would have said something to me at the rink the next day, because I have a good enough relationship with both of them. I'd been in Raleigh for like a month at that point. They know me, and we've had those off, you know, camera conversations. And I showed up at the rink the next day and no one said anything. Rod answered my questions, was super respectful. And so I think that just shows they get it. And then finally, I'll end with Gerard Gallant, because another kind of awkward in-game moment. You know, it's game six, game's on the line. He scratches Kaapo Kakko, breaks up his kids, brings in Dryden Hunt. All the fans want to know about that. And sure, is he going to divulge into his thought process in that moment at that under 6 minute timeout of the first period? Probably not, especially knowing him, because he really doesn't share much to anyone. But I had to ask. His answer was nope. And he said it with a smile. And I kind of moved on and let it be. I would say this about Gerard. Like, he's one that we've had such pleasant conversations, and I can tell that there's a respect level off camera. He's just not someone who ever gives anything to media. And I don't think I'm any different. I try to do the best I can. I try to squeeze the most out of him. But some guys just are who they are.
All right. I'm glad you brought that up, because this was something I wanted to get to at least quickly. I've been writing about this for a long time. Quite frankly, too long, Emily. And so, it's always been weird to me that there are some viewers out there or sports fans out there who get like viscerally angry at in-game coaching interviews. This is not an yes. Emily Kaplan thing.
I know.
This is a philosophical thing. And so, like, to me, like, when it's good, it could be revealing. When it's not good, yeah, it's not great TV, but like, literally every minute of your life, you're going to see not good TV. So I just wonder, from your perspective, if you have any thoughts as to why, at least for some, there's such a visceral dislike of the reporter within the game element. And my only, let's forget about like who the reporter is and if it's sort of based on gender or anything else. My only thought, at least in some ways, is people grow up with this sort of sacrosanct notion that like nobody is to be on the field of play. But it's very silly if you sort of step back and think about how many people are involved in every sport on the field of play who are not the players themselves. So do you have any thoughts as to why? And again, I'm not saying it's a majority, but there are some viewers who really dislike this. And it has nothing to do with hockey. It has to do with the concept itself.
So the overwhelming sentiment I've heard of the faction of people who viscerally hate this, and you're right, there's a group, and I don't know if it's the majority, it's just the ones that you hear on Twitter often. My relationship with Twitter has been really interesting the last couple of weeks as my platform has grown and my visibility has grown, and I've had to protect my mental health, but that's another topic. The one thing that they'll say is it's intrusive. I'm here to watch the game. I don't want to be distracted from the game. And I'm like, okay, this is literally 90 seconds. We tape it in a commercial break. Yes, sometimes we have to go to the two box if they drop the puck. We've never had it talk over a goal or really any significant moment whatsoever. So I find that argument to be pretty flimsy, quite honestly. I think you're right. I think that this is the way it's always been done. The sports I grew up on, we just focused on the athletes and the coaches, but we've got to evolve. And like, especially in hockey, the mantra from the league office down to like grassroots levels, grow the game, grow the game. We're so obsessed with it. Well, the biggest issue in hockey is accessibility. Like, it's a tough sport to get into. It's hard to watch on TV sometimes and follow the puck if you didn't grow up on it. It's expensive. That limits a lot of families from getting to have their kids play. There's so many accessibility issues. We're bringing you closer to the game and inside the minds of these guys, introducing you to characters in the game, giving you something to root for, something to look for. Again, it's a tiny window. Like, I don't think any of these coaching interviews are more than 90 seconds. So I don't really see why so many people have an issue with it. I think it's really unique access. I think it's cool. No, are you going to get a lot of puck cliches? Yeah, probably. You're going to get some. But like you said, when we hit, and like, I really feel like, especially with John Cooper, and I have big expectations for Jared Bednar. No pressure, Jared, but come on, let's get to it. But also Rod Brind'Amour, Bruce Cassidy, Mike Sullivan, some of these other coaches that have had early in the rounds, like, you do get something out of it, and I think it's really neat.
Prioritizing your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. With AG1, just one scoop of this foundational nutrition supplement delivers your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. With AG1, you're giving your body high-quality nutrition with ingredients that are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/odyssey. That's drinkag1.com/odyssey. Check it out.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
I want to get to social media and sort of protecting your mental health in a second, but this is sort of a lead into that. The other thing, at least recently, where you specifically were sort of bombarded on social media with feedback was wearing a mask. That a mask has become a symbol of a culture war is beyond fucking infuriating, but I will digress. You're doing this because the NHL requires you to do this. This is not a Emily Kaplan choice. This is a league-mandated thing while interviewing coaches and players. And again, that it bothers some people is ridiculous to me. But just to clarify, this is the reason you are wearing it correctly, because literally the league has dictated that you as a person within this space has to do this, correct?
Yes, it's in writing. And it's not ESPN mandating me either, which I think is another misconception. The NHL, right. You know, there's a league representative in our truck at every game. If I'm standing next to a player and I don't have a mask on, they won't even let us turn the camera on.
Okay. All right. This gets into, like, you know, when I knew you, or at least when I would see you far more than what I'm talking to you now, you were a writer. You were a writer for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB. And I think you saw yourself as a writer, and you had dreamed of sort of being, I think, you know, doing the pieces that you sort of first started doing at SI and long form, and really, I think, got a great reputation as a writer there. You're now in television in many ways, even though I understand you're still podcasting and stuff. And while I think you have now learned that the benefit of being on air and visible is players recognize you, coaches recognize you, league officials recognize you. In many ways, you're going to get better access because of the television component. That's just the reality of the world that we live in. The downside is that you are far more public within your sport, and I think it does lead to people, because they see you on the screen or on their computer, thinking that they could sort of say anything to you, or that you're more accessible in a way to them, even if that accessibility is not real. So for you, and you're still pretty, you know, fairly young here, how have you navigated that? So on the one hand, like, the reality is, Emily, it's so much more lucrative to be on TV. You can make financially more money. I'm just gonna be blunt with the audience. Like, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars more than a writer could. At the same time, there is a trade-off here, and the trade-off is, like, your privacy is different, especially on mediums like Twitter, et cetera. Have you navigated this? Because this is not something you probably had to navigate, right? When you were at Sports Illustrated or working for Peter King, when you were sort of a known writer within a small space, but nobody was watching you on television then.
It's been strange. I am grateful. I'm someone who has been a proponent of therapy for a while. I have a fantastic therapist. I've had to have a lot of conversations that are soul searching and just making sure that I stay true to myself, and I can't let other people's perception of me become my perception of me. That's just not healthy. It's okay to take feedback, but from people whose opinions that matter. And I think it's a natural instinct. I'm a feedback-oriented person. I thrive. I always want to be better, and I always want feedback. And maybe if I don't get it from my bosses, or I don't get it from that small circle, I search, what does the audience think? And I also think that's natural too, because we're there to serve the audience. But searching my name on Twitter became probably my worst habit. I've stopped recently. And what was frustrating me so much was that I would search my name and people were complaining about things that I couldn't control. So first it was the mask. Again, we went over that. Okay, well, I'm wearing it because the league mandated to do my job. I have to do it. So that's why I wear the mask. And I understand it was distracting people from the content I was doing. And that really infuriated me because I felt like I was working hard to put out good stuff and they couldn't focus on that. They could only focus on the mask. The in-game coaching interviews, people were complaining about that. And I'm like, I just show up where they tell me to show up. My bosses in the league have negotiated this, that we all agree this is something that we want to bring to the game. You can't get mad at me. I'm just doing the best job I can with it. And then the third thing I hear, Emily Kaplan asks dumb questions. And that infuriated me because sometimes my questions might seem dumb, but it's actually by design because my biggest pet peeve, always watching sideline reporters, and I don't want to call anyone out, but sometimes I feel like they just want to flex their knowledge of how smart they are. Here's something I noticed. Here's some long sentence about how I noticed it. Do you agree with me and make me look good? Is essentially the question. And at ESPN, we're always drilled in lean, open, neutral. No one's there to see me. I'm just the vehicle to get these people to share their opinion. So sometimes my questions are really basic and really short just to get them to open up. And so when people are like, oh, she's so dumb, those are dumb questions, I'm like, actually, it's super calculated. You guys are the dumb ones. So those are all things that, like, I had to put out this tweet thread where I just felt like I need to put my piece out there. And then after that, I haven't searched my name or haven't looked at my mentions probably since then. I think that was about a week ago. You know, but there's certain mindfuck moments. Like, I'm standing there at a game, I'm filming a hit, and I see people taking photos of me. Like, and it just feels so invasive. And just like, I guess I signed up to be a public figure. I just didn't really understand all that it would entail. And part of my privacy being sacrificed by that, of people pointing to me, talking to me on the streets like they know me, and especially conditioned to be a writer where I could give so much nuance and I felt like I could tell, share a full story. It's hard for me in these roles because my role is very limited and I only get a certain amount of time to speak and I don't feel like my personality can come through all the time. So I'm like, I don't know if these people actually know me. They just view me as this noun or a thing, and that's really weird. So that's something I've had to adjust to.
Let me follow up. You know, obviously only go as far as you're comfortable with. I'm the son of a therapist, son of a shrink. My late mom was a longtime therapist, so I'm with you. I mean, I could not be more of an advocate for therapy. Also, by the way, all therapists should have therapists, but that's a whole other story. But have you, I mean, this is going to be, I think, this is not a 1 week process here, but are you going to try to work towards a roadmap as to how you can navigate this? Because the reality is it's not going to go away. Like, within hockey circles, as long as you have this job, I don't know if public figure is the right word, but we'll just use this for this conversation. You're going to be a public figure. People are going to comment on your work. People are going to comment on things that probably they would have never commented on prior to you being public. And I'm sure including you as many women in the business have to deal with far more than someone like me. You'll get sexualized comments. You'll get comments about your appearance and things like that. Most men in the business never have to deal with that. And so, like, is there a path where you can navigate this, where you don't want to lose, obviously, the places where you can sort of put your work out at the same time for your own mental health and stability? Like, you got to take care of you so you can not only do the job, but, you know, literally function within a life and within the people who are most important to you.
So I don't know if I've necessarily created this roadmap yet, because honestly, this year has been a whirlwind and everything has just kind of come in a very overwhelming pace and I've kind of been thrust into it. I mean, just for context, again, I was a writer for ESPN.com. When we got the rights, I raised my hand to my bosses and said, I'd love to try sideline reporting. I think I'd be really good at it. If you can give me one or two games, I'd be sick. And then for me to be on the opening night broadcast between the benches, for me to be on the A broadcast team throughout the year, and for me now to be the one that's going to the Stanley Cup is awarded. I'm the first person to interview the MVP, the captain. Like, that all happened pretty fast. And you know, I think I'm just kind of trying to process it myself while also, A, working as hard as I can to keep improving, and B, savor the moment. Because I think that's something that's kind of lost in this, is just appreciating where I'm at. I'm like, I'm 31 years old. Someone's paying me to go around the country, cover hockey games, talk to these athletes, share that on the national audience. Like, that's sick. Can I just enjoy this and enjoy this ride? So I understand, like, you know, I kind of talked about that tweet thread I did, and that felt really healthy just to put my thoughts out there and give a little bit of a clap back and then peel back of how much I was searching for that input and that feedback. You know, we have this 2-week push left now with the finals. I'll probably check social media a lot more. I think my confidence has been built up in the last couple of weeks, just from colleagues and people I trust, people in the game, coaches, players that I know, owners sending me texts of affirmation that I'm doing a good job and that I'm authentically being myself, and that's the best feedback I can get. And focusing on that, I do think next year I probably will be a bit more strategic though, because it's so easy to fall back into that rabbit hole and let all of those thoughts creep in and then let that affect your work. And the truth is, like, you hear athletes talk about blocking out the noise all the time. It's really important to be able to focus on your craft, just to be able to focus on your opinion of you, your boss's opinion of you, and the people you're covering's opinion of you. And I want to make sure all of them think that I'm doing my job. I'm working as hard as I can, and I'm treating them as fairly as I can.
There's a lot of obviously very accomplished people who have done sideline reporting at ESPN. Have you called on any of them? These women or men would be older than you, to just get any kind of advice on how they've navigated the path that you just started this year?
I need to. And the number one person I want to call is Lisa Salters and Andy Tennant, who's been terrific to me. He oversees all of our studio programming. I know works closely with Lisa, and he's recommended her a couple times. And she also went to Penn State like I did. So she's a summer call. You know, opening night, I ran into Erin Andrews, who I had written a piece about when I was at SI. She was in Tampa randomly doing a Bucks thing. And she's like,
Who did NHL?
And she did NHL back in the day, covering the Lightning. And she said, reach out anytime. And I didn't take her up on that because Erin's so busy. And I was like, I don't want to bug EA. I need to give her a call this summer. And I want to pick those people's brains. I think I was really focused this year on, I'm different than anyone who's come through this path. I think my background is different. The reasons they chose me are different. And I just want to focus on what I think would make me successful. But now I realize there's so many other commonalities that these women and men have experienced that I should just hear from their experience as well to help shape me as well.
Last two things for you, and then I'll let you go. One of the most amazing things about covering tennis for Sports Illustrated was when you would get a chance to be sitting in the first row at like the U.S. Open or a place like that, and you would see how great like the Federers, Nadals, and Serenas are. Like, you think you can take a point from them, you're an insane human being. You have no chance, none. And even like the 150th best player is mind-bogglingly great at what they do. Being on the ice as you have, can you give my listeners just a sense of the skill level of that sport? Because, like, it's one thing, and I obviously live in Toronto now, so I've seen far more hockey in the last 4 years than I ever imagined. It's one thing to watch it on TV and to see the skill level. It has to be a whole other way, a whole other ball here to, like, see it, like, from the viewpoint that you do on the ice, where you could see how these fast, big human beings are just incredibly skilled.
Yeah, it's a new appreciation. Like, the game is faster than ever. It's more skilled than ever. I can only imagine 15 years ago, if I was between the benches or at ice level, I would be impressed. But right now I'm just wowed. And like the guys that have stood out to me this year, like being between the benches for a game that Cale Makar plays in is like, if anyone can pay $1 million to get that experience, if you're a hockey fan, I would recommend it. He's insane. Cause I don't think we've ever seen, it's Connor McDavid. I don't think we've ever seen someone as skilled as him be able to pull off those moves at such a high speed. And I think that's what makes him special. And Cale's the same way, and he does it backwards, and he can keep up with Connor McDavid and just looks at the ice differently. The one thing you appreciate at ice level, sight lines. Like, you always hear that with officials and coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Some, like Tony D'Angelo, you know, controversial player, but like one of the most elite passers I've ever seen. And just looking at where his eyes went and where the puck went and somewhere different, I was blown away. So yes, it's been such a unique experience and has given me a new appreciation for the sport.
Last one. You know, representation should be the goal of any professional sports. And in hockey, we have seen in the last couple of years and months or so, women getting into pretty prominent positions in organizations. Megan Dugan's the director of player development for the Devils. Marie-Philippe Poulin was just hired by the Canadiens. It's a pretty amazing hire if you want a winner. Emily Castonguay is the assistant GM for the Vancouver Canucks. I think Cammy Granato is as well. Helly Wickenheiser works for the Maple Leafs. I mean, it's a growing list. So there's a lot of great things that are happening when it comes to representation in hockey, when, particularly for women in these organizations. At the same time, man, like, this year has been a garbage year for hockey when it comes to the culture of hockey and some of the pretty terrible things that we've seen. From, and I realize it's sort of a big question, but from your perspective, like, are things getting better here? Are things getting worse? Or, like, is it like many other things, sort of shades of gray in both ways?
Shades of gray, but I do think we're improving, and I think there's more allies than ever. And I think it's cooler to be an ally more than ever, quite frankly. One of the things hockey needs is to diversify, but we need the same men came through the same path and they look exactly the same who got to positions of power. And now those men are realizing, oh, it's okay. And it actually makes me a better leader if I am more open-minded and more inclusive. I think Kyle Dubas, you know, he was the youngest GM at the time, maybe Chico was, but he was very young. He was the one that brought in Haley Wickenheiser. When I talked to him about it, he was like, well, if we're only considering 50% of the population for this job, that's a gross inefficiency. Like, don't even think that there's 50% of people who are pretty qualified. And that's why he brought Haley Wickenheiser in. I think of Jim Rutherford. He honestly is my new hero because he's getting his third opportunity to run a team as an old white guy who came through the same exact path and said, you know how I'm going to do it this third time? I'm going to give an opportunity to these two women in high positions of power, Emily Castagne and Tammy Granato, who are both super qualified, and just make them AGMs. And that's the new standard. And now that he did it, it's a copycat league. So I think the fact that there's so many allies out there is great. And I do find that it's a more and more welcoming place to women. The guys that I cover, you know, and the conversations that I have for them, they've all been so respectful of me and respectful of the work that I do. And never, I don't really think they view gender as an aspect of my job. It's just me as a human being. And I'm really grateful for that. So yes, we've seen some horrific stories about hockey culture and abuse, hazing, racism, sexism, those need to go away, homophobia. But they will go away as long as we keep being open-minded as a group. And I think that there's more and more people willing to be open-minded. And that's exciting.
Emily Kaplan's a national reporter and writer for ESPN's coverage of the NHL, co-host of In the Crease, that podcast with Linda Cohn. You'll see her on Wednesday, game one of the Stanley Cup Final on ABC and ESPN, Lightning at Avalanche, which should be awesome. And Emily, it still blows me away, man. Same person I saw in a newsroom, however, 5-6 years ago, is now in the middle of the Stanley Cup Final on ABC. I'm really happy for your success, and thanks so much today for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate you, and yeah, just try to enjoy it.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Emily Kaplan, who gave me some time today on a very, very busy travel day for her on Monday before the Stanley Cup Final. If you like these kind of conversations, please head to wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That stuff really, really has meaning. Go down the archives list. There should be something that you will find interesting. Last podcast before this, Haley Rosen, founder and CEO of Just Women Sports. Really interesting business that she is growing, as well as a roundtable with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Austin Karp of Sports Business Journal. We go pretty in-depth on NBA viewership there. A couple of non-sports media pods that I wanted to do. A foreigner covering America, Edward Keenan of the Toronto Star. He's the Washington Bureau Chief. And what it's like to cover the United States at this sort of hinge point in time from a foreign perspective. And he is a Canadian living in Washington covering, or living around Washington covering the United States. And John Woodrow Cox, the maybe the foremost expert in the media on the impact of gun violence on children, has written a best-selling book on it, nearly won the Pulitzer Prize. And so, or maybe he did win the Pulitzer Prize, I apologize if he did. That was a pretty sobering discussion on gun violence and why this continues to happen, how you cover this stuff. And it's a traumatic experience, obviously, for the people who suffered, but in many ways also for the reporters who are covering this as well. Head down the archives list. Tony Khan, AEW's president, was a recent guest. Tom Verducci on Roger Angel in the Art of Baseball Writing. Leslie Visser on her Hall of Fame career. And sports broadcasting, Larry Collins on calling Triple Crown horse racing. Archives, there should be some stuff you like. Want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Want to thank everybody at Cadence 13, and thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.